Let's say you're a millionaire. That's a lot of money, right? Now let's say you're a billionaire. That's a lot more money. But how much more? Think of all those dollars as seconds on a clock. A million seconds would total 11 days. But a billion seconds equals nearly 32 years. Rich is nice, but billionaire rich is over the moon. And the wealth of billionaires is now zooming out of this world. There are only 2,200 of these uber-rich dudes in the world, but the wealth stashed away by these elites hit a new record this summer, averaging more than $4 billion each. On average, they've even pocketed an extra $500 million in the midst of the COVID-19 economic crash. Bear in mind that these fortunate few did nothing to earn this haul. They didn't work harder, didn't get one digit smarter, didn't create some new breakthrough product to benefit humankind. They just cranked back in their gold-plated lazy boys and let their money make money for them. Then there are multimillionaire corporate chieftains who are cashing in on their own failure, having closed stores throughout America, fired thousands of workers, stiffed suppliers and creditors, taken bailout money from taxpayers, and even led their corporations into bankruptcy. The CEOs of such collapsing giants as Hertz, JCPenney, and Toys R Us have grabbed millions of dollars in, believe it or not, bonus payments. The typical employee at JCPenney, for example, is held to part-time work, making under $12,000 a year. Thousands of them are now losing even that miserly income as the once mighty retailer is shutting 154 stores. Yet, the CEO was paid a $4.5 million cash bonus before the company filed for bankruptcy this year. This is Jim Hightower saying, and still, the corporate establishment wonders why the people consider it a club of heartless, greedy bastards.
Hightower's commentaries are brought to you by the Hightower Lowdown, the monthly newsletter with Hightower's take on what Wall Street and Washington are up to. For information, visit HightowerLowdown.org.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
I can't get it out of my head that Wisconsin senator today basically rewriting a rewrite of the January 6th history. Going into detail about this J. Michael Waller's, what he says he experienced, which was January 6th was a festive occasion filled with small children and then old fat people who were very happy. It was like a parade. It was a festive occasion. And it was one guy shouted from behind, "Charge!" and somehow turned them all radical. Very, very questionable, very interesting. But to have a U.S. senator read that into the record is just grabs me. And what it made me think about is, you know, 10 years ago today, I was literally occupying the Capitol in Wisconsin, in Madison, Wisconsin, with 100,000 of my closest friends. All new friends I met in Wisconsin. And one of those folks that I met while there is the great Professor Harvey Kay, author of fantastic books, my favorite being the one on FDR, The Four Freedoms. But Harvey, thanks for taking time for us.
Oh God! When you sent me the message and I want to come on, a flood, needless to say, a flood of memories just like made their way into my forebrain, and I thought, oh, in fact, I think I said to you, going to speak from the heart. It's more the memories that I've got than the official history in my head. But 10 years, right? 10 years. I was just saying to someone the other day, in fact, that looking back, that it was amazing how the Democratic Party elite, not in Wisconsin, but in D.C., the Obama administration, turned their backs on what we were doing here in Wisconsin to try to save our collective bargaining rights, the rights that were first established for public employees in 1959, the first state in the union, and it suddenly ripped out in a real blow of a legislative session. And I think about that. And I did remember, I said to someone, but there were a few people who came and stood by us. You came, Michael Moore came, and those are the two names that popped into my head first.
No, I mean, it was one of those things that at the time I said, this is going to be the most important fight of our generation. You know, before with the Patco, fight for my, the generation before me, Wisconsin was the fight. And I remember coming back, to talk about a slew of memories.
Yeah.
I remember coming back to Pennsylvania and talking to the head of the labor movement here. And I said, get ready. All of the stuff that we saw go on in Wisconsin is coming this way. And he told me, no, that could never happen here. And I was literally shocked. And here we are, 2023, I'm predicting Pennsylvania is going to be the next right to work state. And all of that horrible that happened 10 years ago in Wisconsin is coming this way.
Well, I was convinced that if the Democrats did not take the Senate, and especially if Trump himself had remained in the presidency, that we were going to become a right to work nation. Okay, that they were going to override every single workers' right across the country. So in that sense, obviously, and along with many others, November election was a relief. However, it's clearly the case that the struggle has literally, just begun. The election has yet to show itself to be the victory by labor that you and I want.
Yeah, we're a little over a month in. We got like two or three more months to get some stuff done. but I do want to go back to that moment in Wisconsin.
Yeah.
Because, I tweeted out a picture of, the first person I came across was a little old woman, with a cardboard sign said Union Thug on it. And she was this sweet old lady. She handed me a sweet potato.
Wow.
That is the first person I met. And I'm like, I was ready because I went to Detroit, to Sterling Heights, Michigan during the newspaper strike back in the 90s. And that was a violent occasion. Police were beating people constantly. I was expecting that. So as we're driving to Madison, my mind is getting in this frame of mind that, the news is reporting, this uprising and there's going to be this tussling. And I meet this sweet little old lady handing out sweet potatoes and I'm feeling cheated.
Well, look, I'll mention once again. And so in 1959, Wisconsin was the first state to enact public employees' collective bargaining rights. We were followed, I think, by the city of New York and then the state of New York. I'm not exactly sure, but in 59. So, one had come to believe that even if Republicans were in power, that the rights of labor might well be secure. And I think it really did come as a shock to many of us, even though, and by the way, I should let everyone know that the one sector of public employees that did not have collective bargaining rights were university professors. School teachers did. All public employees, but university professors were not included. And it was only, I think, about a year before Walker's victory, maybe 2009, that we actually gained our collective bargaining rights and we were organized. And so we never even, I don't even think we got to do one session of any kind of collective bargaining when all of a sudden it was taken from us. And I can tell you that I think the feeling that I had at that moment when this all came down was not unlike when I was in college in 1968, 1969, and Richard Nixon was elected president. And I had this feeling that it might be the end of an era. But this time it really was truly, it really was something that even haunts me now. It's also interesting, and I'm really glad we're acknowledging it tonight. Most people don't remember the Wisconsin Rising. That everyone goes back maybe 10 years and think about Occupy, Arab Spring, that kind of stuff. But the Wisconsin Rising was really a really radical moment because on several occasions, 100,000 people turned up in Capitol Square and in Madison. And moreover, the Capitol itself was occupied, but it was a totally different kind of occupation to that which occurred on January 6th in D.C. For a start, it was utterly peaceful. I don't want to make too much of it because I always thought it was a bit too cutesy, the idea of Wisconsin nice. And you talk about Wisconsin nice, Minnesota nice. But you were there. I mean, as you just said, somebody gave you a sweet potato. I hope it was already baked.
It was. And then the next guy gave me a bratwurst. So,
now we're talking. Okay, now we're talking.
But he was an iron worker.
Yeah, right. Well, you know, I wrote a piece afterward, and I reread it because I wanted to try to recall the emotions involved. Anyhow, so Scott Walker was basically the toy boy of the Koch brothers. And Alec basically saw Wisconsin as a prime target, that it, you know, the, what was that, the American Legislative
Exchange Council.
Executive Committee, something like that. You know, the idea was to turn one by one every state into a right-to-work state and basically deregulate business as much as possible, lower taxes, and this is important, essentially, and I'm going to use a very brutal word, and you'll excuse me, I hope, the rape of higher education would begin. And all of this, by the way, you could take all of the things that were outlined by Alec and take it all the way back to 1971 in the Lewis Powell memo, right? The memo to the Chamber of Commerce as to what business needed to do to overcome and literally turn back the advances of the 60s that literally promised or threatened, if you were a business person, to literally really turn America into a social and industrial democratic nation, as FDR had envisioned, and in the 60s we had hoped would advance nationally once again. So yeah, so this happened, and we were really horrified. I also want to point out, because this is telling, that it wasn't simply a matter of how they were going to repair the budget, because the whole excuse for this of literally disempowering public employees was supposedly budget repair. It was actually called the budget repair bill, and it stripped public employees of their collective bargaining rights, except for two groups who continue to hold on to their collective
cops
bargaining
and
rights.
Cops and firefighters.
Police and firefighters. And I will tell you that we came to know that the firefighters were our allies on that occasion. You will recall, I'm
Malin
sure.
Mitchell.
They were our allies. But the police themselves were not our enemies. I mean, at least the time I was there, the hours I was inside the Capitol building, I had no sense that there was any Wisconsin police officer ready to open anybody's head with a club or anything like that.
No, in fact, to that point, I actually had one of the Capitol policemen help me carry my bag into the, because I had this whole huge setup because we went in there to do our radio show. We had this big clunky box with a big bag, and he actually helped me carry it up the steps.
That's fantastic. That sounds like Wisconsin more than Scott Walker himself, I'll tell you, no matter how many years he served as our governor.
No, and to,
now,
the,
it's also the case,
and to that point, you know, the Wisconsin nice thing is absolutely true. You know, in fact, while we were there, I repeatedly talked about the environment of which these kids who were the university students there in Madison had organized an incredible kind of little micro society where they took care of people's needs of food, childcare, health care. In fact, I saw one girl couldn't have been more than 18 or 19 on the ground scrubbing, you know, something off the floor.
Right.
And I'm going,
right.
You know, she doesn't do that
That's
at
right.
home. And you know, there's a guy next to her doing the same thing. And I definitely know he didn't do it at home. But there they did.
When we went down on the Friday of the very big weekend, we went over to the Continental Hotel, I believe it was, which was basically union headquarters. And it was a hotel where the workers were themselves organized. We got into the march around the Capitol building. And then we went into the Capitol and spent the evening in the Capitol building itself. And I could tell you, in all the years of politics that I knew, I think it was the closest, the purest sense of democracy I'd ever experienced. I mean, you had, as you pointed out, people of every age who were there. Not only the old woman, to use the term old woman, the old woman who handed you the baked sweet potato, down to the kids. I mean, families, it was not like a Packers game in a way, which is very much a family occasion. And then, of course, the graduate students, the TA, who were organized at Madison, and had collective bargaining rights, they set up the People's Mic in the Capitol. And one of the reasons I had sent you that video was not to tell you what it was about. I knew you were there. I mean, I was upset that you thought I had forgotten you were there. It really had to do with the fact that every time I play it, it just brings back, an incredible warmth, you know, that this is what democracy looks like. And then on top of that, you had delegations from all over the country of workers who came to show their solidarity with us in the Capitol building. I mean, I looked up around that day and I thought, this is incredible what Americans at their best is like, you know, you know, the better angels of our nature were on display that day that we were there in the Capitol building, occupying the Capitol. I could go on and on. But the other thing, the thing to remember is that the Democratic senators, they left the state in order to not have to participate in the vote. And they held up the final vote. They held it up for only so long, of course. And then at the same time, it was the case. Do you remember when the, was it Toronto or Montreal? Where were those radio guys called in?
Yeah. And then they got Scott Walker to think that they were the Koch brothers.
Right. That was one of the funniest moments of my entire media life. I think.
Where he was talking about taking a baseball bat to him and all kinds of stuff like that. He goes, no, we're not going to take a baseball bat. We're just going to screw them in other ways.
Yeah, right. Exactly. And then the recall effort ensued. And then we did, in fact, gain a recall election. But there again, the Democrats did us little good at that moment when they literally brought back as their candidate Tom Barrett, who's a nice enough man and mayor of Milwaukee, may still be for all I know. The point being that he had lost before. Don't bring a loser in to run against the guy who beat him, right? And we should have had a far more aggressive kind of voice speaking on our behalf. And we lost. And right. Walker regained the governorship and held on to it. And he served a full, I guess it was 3 terms as governor, something like that. We now, as in case everyone doesn't know, we now have a Democratic governor, Tony Evers, who had been the state superintendent of schools. But the Republicans continue to have a stranglehold on the state legislature, and it has cost us immensely. I mean, it's as if it's Trump on steroids in some ways. It's definitely the right-wing GOP on steroids. They've done everything they can. They've been able to block the governor's efforts to try to overcome the pandemic. But something else I wanted to point out as a consequence of not specifically Act 10, but related to Act 10, is they set out to rewrite the charter. This is all part of that Powell stuff going back to 71. They sought to rewrite the charter of the University of Wisconsin. And that is the Walker administration. And they almost succeeded, but people caught up with it. They had tried to excise, first of all, the fact that the university would be committed, this was in the charter, you might say, committed to the pursuit of truth. They literally excised it from the charter in the draft. The other thing is, and this is famous in Wisconsin, it's linked to the story of the UW founding and all the more, perhaps you might say, to Robert La Follette, the great progressive senator from Wisconsin, and what he helped the University of Wisconsin system, which it eventually became, do. And that is, the boundaries of the university would be the boundaries of the state. That is, the university would play a small d democratic role in the development of the state. That too was excised. Unfortunately, the right people caught it, and the Walker administration said, oh, no, those are just editorial omissions. We never intended to do that. Bull. They wanted to do it. Yeah. And if they had had their way, they would have destroyed. Look, the university has taken a terrible beating. Our budgets have been cut. Basically, they rewrote the system rules so that basically they could impose corporate figures as chancellors of the university if they wanted from top down. I mean, this is not the UW and the UW system that I would argue was the greatest state university system in the United States. I don't think I can say that any longer. And that is a consequence of that.
And that's the Walker legacy, and that's the Republican, that's the Powell memo legacy. They've mission accomplished. And I tell people to read that because it's an important document. And it's not the only one. I'm sure there were many other people working on the same vein. It's just the one that was written by a guy who eventually became a U.S. Supreme Court justice.
Yeah, I believe he actually was nominated 2 weeks after he delivered the memo to the Chamber of Commerce.
But, you know, the thing is if you look back at it, you go, wow, mission accomplished. This, if it wasn't meant to be the playbook, it was the playbook.
Yeah. So anyhow, I mean, I'll never forget those weeks. There was a sense we had that however great the challenge, that we might be able to block it all. There was that sense. I don't think we sensed the futility of our actions in occupying the Capitol.
Yeah.
I think we thought that this was a reminder to Wisconsinites. I mean, people should realize that this was the capital P progressive state. Without reservation, I can say it. And I grew up, by the way, in the greater New York area, New York and New Jersey, mostly New Jersey side. And I can tell you that when I came out to Wisconsin, I don't even think I was as aware of just how capital P progressive was. Even Republicans, before Walker and his ilk, even Republicans tried to lay claim to the progressive legacy. But yeah, the first Walker would have nothing of it. And by the way, people should understand that Walker dropped out of college his senior year at Marquette University. And even now, no one has yet revealed fully what led him to drop out or to resign from the university.
Interesting. But Wisconsin was the first state, as I understand it, to have workers' compensation, first state to have unemployment insurance. As you said, first state to give public sector workers the right to organize. They were the first state in a lot of things.
And the history department at UW-Madison, number one, was considered the capital P progressive history program in the United States for decades. And in another one of the departments, economics, is where the field of labor history was founded in this state. I mean, you know, you've got a history in which the western part of the state was settled mostly by Scandinavians who had a real social democratic spirit. And the city of Milwaukee, the eastern side of the state, in particular, is the German-American side of the state. And they, too, brought a kind of social democratic spirit, in fact, a decidedly socialist spirit. And Milwaukee had for years elected socialist mayors. So this was a progressive state. And look, things are happening. We've not given up. Keep an eye on Wisconsin in the next several months.
That's what I was going to ask you, because, you know, I remember the moment that I found out that it was over. It was like 3 o'clock in the morning when the final vote was taken. I remember the girl who was on her little cot next to me weeping uncontrollably. And then the girl next to her who unfortunately slept through the whole thing. And I knew she was going to be weeping when she found out. But I remember that moment, like thieves in the night, they rammed it through. And it was at that moment you go, you know, what next?
Yeah. And then, of course, there was they reapportioned this state. Once again, a stranglehold on the politics and electoral democracy of Wisconsin. But things are going to change, I believe. I'm a Wisconsinite, and our state motto, I'm now a Wisconsinite, our state motto is forward. So you got to look with hope. I will tell you, in my state assembly district, which is generally Democratic, we elected a young woman, progressive, truly progressive woman, who literally beat the incumbent, okay, Democrat, in order to take a far more progressive and aggressive posture in the state assembly. And I have hopes that election augurs major change in Wisconsin over the next 2 to 4 years.
So real quick, the last kind of line of questioning in this, because I think if anything we learned 10 years ago is you've got to go bold. You've got to do something other than what you've been doing. And look, I look at Obama, and one of the big knocks, I got two major knocks against Obama. One, he shook my hand and said we were going to get EFCA. We got nothing. Actually, three, he said we weren't getting bad trade deals. We got them. And he was going to put on comfortable shoes, and he was going to march those picket lines. Yet we didn't hear a peep out of him or the administration during that entire time. And the That's Democratic right. establishment, as you pointed out, ignored the whole thing. So how do we take the lesson learned 10 years ago, and as you said, things might be changing, and use that going forward in this moment where Republicans are basically holding everything up on the national level? How do we take what we learned and move forward?
Okay, well, you and I have spoken about this before, and I think right now things are not clear coming out of the Biden administration. And they're not clear, not only because of whatever faults lie within the White House itself, but also because the Democrats have a real, excuse the expression, handicap. They've got two senators who may well block the crucial changes needed. Five senators, am I miscounting?
My guess is five, but you're going to go with two.
Well, I figure Manchin and Sinema are the key obstacles. I know
Mark
Feinstein.
Warner.
I know there are a couple of others, but those are the ones I'm most worried about. And it strikes me, I really want. I do have to tell you, I think it is absolutely essential that everyone who's listening to this show, I'm not going to tell them to write their congressman, but I am going to tell you, whether you're, if you're not in a union, join a union. If you're in a union, have your union speak up loudly for the PRO Act and the $15 minimum wage. And how do you do that? You contact Bernie Sanders' Senate office. And if you're here in Wisconsin, where I am, you contact Tammy Baldwin's Senate office. And you say, you go big or you go home, Democrats. You got to do it. Bernie wants to go big. Bernie will be the vehicle that can, I believe, push Biden. But you know what? I'm a little disappointed right now. I have to confess that I was not going to say it, but I'm a little disappointed. I want to hear Joe Biden endorse the labor organizing at the Amazon warehouse in Alabama. And I want him to say what FDR may well have said. The AFL issued the poster. If he said, if I, at least that's how they reported it, if I were in a factory, I'd join a union. I want Biden to say, if I worked in a warehouse, I'd join a union.
I think that is a, we should start that campaign. I'm right there with you. But Harvey, I appreciate the time. Good memories. I wish they were better. I wish Walker would have lost. But, you know, it's part of our history. Harvey, I appreciate the time.
Thank you. You're doing a great job. I hope everyone joins me in applauding you.
I appreciate that, Harvey. Thanks so much. Our good friend, Professor Harvey Kay. And look, you know, one of my favorite signs of the whole uprising was someone posted a sign on the wall that said, "Thank you, CNN, for telling me what's on Twitter," because they weren't there either. They were just getting reports from people on social media. Interesting times. Quick break. Right back. Stick around. You're listening to The Rick Smith Show.
Saving work in America, one show at a time. The Rick Smith Show.